Why should you visit TheChairShot.com? TheChairShot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. TheChairShot.com. Always use your head. Why should you visit TheChairShot.com? TheChairShot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. TheChairShot.com. Always use your head. Attitude, bitch.
It is October the 14th, 2019. Good evening, everybody, and welcome. As the Chair Shot Radio Network presents The Reaction here live on the Chair Shot Radio Network, I am your host. My name is Harry Broadhurst. Joining me, as per usual, the Down Since Day One co-host, Tony Acero.
Yo.
And we welcome back the co-hostess with the mostest, Miss Liz Puglisi.
Hello.
Okay, Liz, so you didn't get to talk about Hell in the Cell last week. Because
No, I did not.
You have family and friends that are Yankees fans, and they were busy beating the brakes off of Minnesota.
Yes.
So now you have your opportunity to say your piece about that particular show. Do you want to just want to give quick thoughts here, or do you want to run through a full final reaction real quick?
You know, I'm just going to say this. I'll make it short and sweet. I didn't hate it as much as everybody else did. I know people are still going on and on about the ending of, you know, Brian's death. But, you know, there was some confusion. There was whatever. There was a lot of anger. I, too, when it happened, I was like, okay, what the hell is this? Right? It was weird and everything, but... I don't know. I didn't hate the show. I actually enjoyed it. I would have given it a solid 7.5, 8 if we scored it. I don't really have too much bad to say about it. I get why people are upset and such, but I wasn't, you know, ready to lynch everybody over it.
Well, having had a week to reflect on this, I think we can be a little bit more forgiving of the booking decisions in the WWE Network era when it comes to these kind of finishes to pay-per-views. To the paying customer in attendance, I can understand being pissed off because you're paying whatever it is for a ticket price and you're not getting a conclusive finish to a match that you paid your hard-earned money to see. But it's a whole lot easier to swallow this finish at $10 than it was at $60, isn't it, Tony?
Sure, I guess. I don't know. I'm all about quality. I'm not going to let them use that excuse.
All right, so the title of tonight's episode of The Reaction is The Aftermath of the Draft. And try saying that 5 times fast. And the reason being is that WWE concluded its 2019 talent split, its talent exchange, its redrafting to re-separate the rosters for exclusive rosters for both Raw and SmackDown on USA and Fox, respectively. As to how long that gets, that's anybody's fucking guess. But for now... we'll go with it. We'll play along here. And therefore, the opening thoughts that we will have will be about the SmackDown side of the draft because SmackDown happens on Friday. Raw happens live right before we do the show. SmackDown's the easier of the two shows to cover since it's not quite as fresh in our memories. Tony, your overall thoughts on the way that the draft was presented this year with the fact that they just had Stephanie come out and announce the picks rather than actually delving into going back towards like figureheads for both brands going forward?
You know, I don't want to go and say, like, all the drafts were amazing or, you know, we've come to expect a certain level of quality with the drafts. We've seen over the years how little the brand extension has mattered. From wild card rules to, you know, Ric Flair and Vince McMahon being bosses to Bischoff to, like, it's never been the greatest thing, but there's always this feeling of, I don't know, kind of for a little bit, you kind of feel like, oh shit, okay, cool. This is going to be a nice little start. This person's going to, oh, they belong on SmackDown. Or, you know, remember the days when SmackDown was a very distinct product and you thought to yourself, if they go there, we're going to get some good shit out of them. This one in particular had none of that. Zero. Not even a little bit. In fact, I think it's one of the worst ones that I've ever seen. From the super cheesy War Room videos where the people who were there were wearing the same clothing on Friday and Monday. Did they stay the night? Were there sleeping bags in the corner? What was this? To the fact that they were celebrating choices that they made as if there was a possibility that they weren't going to be chosen. It just a lot of little things. Stephanie reading them off, I didn't really mind. But also, when you consider the amount of people she announced tonight, for example, who were essentially already belonging to the brand that they were quote unquote drafted to, it just felt like a complete waste of time.
Liz, same question. How did you feel the presentation for the draft was handled with Stephanie coming out and announcing the picks and not going back to having a general manager for both Raw and SmackDown, respectively?
I didn't mind Stephanie come out and coming out to announce them. I thought it was kind of that aspect of it I liked. I think it was just a streamlined way of doing it. Will be interesting to see if we do get a general manager or some type of figurehead on either show post the draft and who it would be, of course. But overall, I kind of had a bit of a silly vibe to it. I didn't care. I know some people were complaining on social media, like, oh, in previous drafts, like, the person would come out or whatever. That didn't really bother me so much that they would just pop the name up there with a graphic or whatever. Especially since some of the people that were drafted are actually injured. I mean, Joe was drafted, but he was sitting there with a cast on, so that was a little odd. I guess in some way it makes sense. Overall, it kind of, for me, I don't ever watch the NFL draft or anything like that, so I can't really comment on what they were trying to go for in relation to that. But for me, it kind of had a silly vibe, and like Tony said, about 90% of them seemed to stay where they were for the most part, so you kind of wonder what they could just. I'm like, okay, Roar is now SmackDown. SmackDown's like Roar, and it would have been over with.
I think the idea was behind it was obviously to attempt to pop a rating, because usually these draft specials have been rated higher than regular episodes, so to speak, of the shows in the past. A couple of big matches did come out of this draft, though, and we're going to talk about one of those right now. As the very first match on SmackDown on Fox this past weekend was Roman Reigns taking on Seth Rollins, Roman representing SmackDown, Seth representing Raw, respectively, where the winner of the match got the first pick for their particular brand. Seth Rollins picks up a disqualification victory after Bray Wyatt gets involved, the Fiend attacking from underneath the ring and pulling Seth underneath the ring like he's Kane all of a sudden, or Gangrel. And then eventually Rollins escapes from underneath the ring and it runs up the ramp until Bray tries to attack him again. First of all, let's talk about the match here. Nothing we haven't seen from these two before. They've obviously feuded for an extended time after Seth turned on Roman and Ambrose the first time with the Shield breaking up. But we haven't really seen this matchup in a while. How did you think the chemistry looked for Seth and Roman in this match? And should they end up on the same show down the road, do you think that this is a storyline, an angle, a potential championship feud that the WWE could run? And would you as a fan be interested in it? Liz, I'll start with you. What did you think of the match? And what do you think about the future prospects for these two facing off?
I think going in, I think a lot of people were like, oh, okay, that's interesting. I think a lot of people were complaining that it wasn't, you know, champion versus champion, but obviously the champion's Brock, so that wasn't going to happen. I didn't mind the match. I actually enjoyed the match. I thought the match was one of the better matches that the two of them have had, maybe because we haven't seen it in a while. I'm a complete, you know, Shield mark. You know, I love all three of them. So I wouldn't mind a program. I'd be happy with a program with the two of them. I think it's only a matter of time before they put Roman back in the title hunt. So I definitely can see them doing something with it in the future. How soon? I don't know. I don't get the feeling that it'll be very soon, though.
Tony, same two questions. What did you think of the match between Seth and Roman? And do you think that the WWE would have an interest in running these two against each other in a potential championship storyline down the road? And do you as a fan have an interest in that storyline as parts A and B for the second question?
No, I thought the match was pretty solid, especially for SmackDown opening match. I thought it was really good. I could have done without the Fiend popping out of the ring, but I guess that's the route that they chose to go, which continued tonight. Excuse me. As far as the program between them two, yeah, I mean, it's an easy one. There's history there. It's not something you need to dig too deep for to create a story. And they're going to be main players. I mean, they already are, but I wouldn't mind an extended program with the two. Of course, what the issue is, what we saw tonight, which will correlate to my response to your question, is that you can have some amazing wrestling and still have a shitty product due to bad writing. So Seth and Reigns can, you know, do really, really well, but it really is up to the story. I'm just saying it's a very easy story to tell since they, you know, it's two-thirds of the Shield.
So much interaction with each other as well. I feel like that makes it a lot more obvious for them to go up against each other down the road, even if they attempt to keep them separated right now through the current draft. Let's go through some quick hits for Friday night's episode of SmackDown. Apparently, Shorty Gable's a thing here, which is just fucking stupid. But I guess if you want to steer into the skid with it, you might as well. Tony, what are your thoughts on Chad Gable's rebranding, and do you think that despite the stupidity of the name, the Gable thing has legs?
I mean, it's getting him TV time, so I guess I can't be too upset. The boy deserves it. The name thing is you know, it's like, you know, trying to own the word, trying to make the bad word into a good one. It's like Schoolhouse, you know, how to handle bullying, and I mean, I guess it doesn't really affect. It just kind of makes me roll my eyes a little bit. It's not something so offensive that I'm bothered by it. But again, it's got Gable on some good TV time because of it.
Corbin picks up the win though, Liz, and rebounds to even up the series at one match apiece. I do believe both of them landed on SmackDown in this draft here. Do you think we see a tiebreaker to the series? Must the feud continue, as they used to say?
What? Unfortunately, I mean, yeah, no, I mean, my first reaction, I was talking to Kimmy during Raw, and I said, oh, what if Gable was drafted to SmackDown? I was like, oh, we're going to be stuck with this nonsense again. I like both guys. I mean, we all know by now that I'm a big Corbin fan. I like Chad Gable. I think the Shorty thing is stupid because there's other people that are his same height, or maybe even, I mean, Ray has to be, what, his height, a little bit shorter. So the whole thing makes absolutely no sense on that level. If there weren't as many smaller guys, all right, I can see it, but it doesn't make any sense to me. But yeah, I think unfortunately we're stuck with at least one more match between the two of them.
But I think the matches between them have actually been pretty good. The King of the Ring final match on Raw and then the match on SmackDown this past Friday were both really good. I thought the match at the pay-per-view was kind of a disappointment, but I think a lot of that had to do with the crowd reactions just not being there for that match as much as they were for the other two. Liz, I'll stick with you for my next quick hit here, and that will be Brock Lesnar's promo about wanting revenge on what happened with Cain Velasquez in the UFC now that Velasquez is bringing the fight to Brock in the WWE. Do you as a wrestling fan care that Cain Velasquez and Brock Lesnar have UFC history here? Or is this just another example of somebody coming from outside of the sport and into a main event spot to you?
So here's the thing. When he first came out, I didn't have any idea who the hell he was. I mean, they were saying his name, but I was like, I have no idea who the hell this is. He could have been an indie wrestler for all, you know, I knew. I had no idea who he was until they explained, I mean, which they did relatively quickly, but you have that, like, you kind of shut down for a moment, like, what the hell, you know, is this? I'm kind of mixed on it. I mean, I grew up in the era where you had people, you had celebrities popping in all the time, really, when I was growing up. What, Mr. T, you know, had a match. So it's not that it's like something brand new. Not that it's like they've been just started to do this like in the last couple of years. They have a history of it to some degree. I don't know. I mean, it kind of seems like it's something that they're putting together, obviously, to me. I could be wrong. You know, for Crown Jewel, for whatever reason. I don't mind, I don't hate Brock as much as other people do. I mean, he's not one of my favorites, but I don't find him as annoying as I used to. To me, it seems like he's trying to put in a little more effort, especially like with the emotion and the acting part of it or whatever. But the whole thing with Kane, I have to admit, I'm like rather indifferent about it because everybody's like, oh, Kane is going to be the champion. Kane is going to be this, and maybe he will be, but I don't see it lasting that long. I'm interested in seeing how it'll play out before I really become angered or not about it.
Tony, you've mentioned before that the beginning of your fandom started around the Attitude Era, Undertaker's debut going up into the Attitude Era there. And so you would be used to the UFC competitors kind of making the jump to the WWE, people like Ken Shamrock, Dan Severn, and Dr. Death Steve Williams here. Do you see any kind of correlation between the people from UFC that became stars in the Attitude Era and these people here? Or do you, as a wrestling fan, prefer that they would stick to wrestlers only and leave the UFC people to their own variation of combat sports?
You know, I'm not some highbrow wrestling fan. I mean, I don't even think those exist. But that said, you know, this is our product and they should stay out of it and blah, blah, blah. Like, that doesn't really work with my mindset. I mean, as per usual, I just want a good story. This one is not bad. It has history. It has legs. It has reality. I just, I'm just not interested in Brock as the champion. And I think what bugs me the most is that, you know, you created a monster to the point where you have to go outside of the product to have a believable, you know, competitor. If we're to believe that Kane signed a multi-year deal, then, I mean, let's see what he's got. You know, I've never seen him wrestle. I don't know what type of capabilities he has. So I can't just sit here and say, you know, he sucks. He's not one of us. He doesn't belong in the product, blah, blah, blah. Really the only thing that bugs me is that, like, it's just there's other people that I'd rather see, you know, fighting for the belt. I think I said it last week. There's no need for the title to be involved in this. This match, this story, this whatever, all works 100% without the belt. And someone else could be fighting for that or fighting towards it, or, you know, you could tell any number of stories for the World Heavyweight Championship, and you're not. You're instead putting it on the back burner of a feud that is, by any means, a blood feud. To the point where I don't understand why Kane would want the title. I don't understand why that would even be his goal. It's like a secondary thing to him, which makes it a secondary thing to Brock. And I don't like that.
Moving forward for SmackDown, Kofi Kingston's back in the ring here. 6-man tag team action as the New Day take on the OC. They would both be separated, New Day to SmackDown, OC to Raw, during the course of the draft. So according to their own rules, this will be the first and the only time this happens here. Kofi Kingston and the New Day pick up the win when Kofi pinned AJ Styles with Trouble in Paradise. But damn if what we said was going to happen, Tony, didn't happen. As soon as he drops the title, Kofi's back to just being another guy in a tag team.
Yeah, you saw this complaint a lot online, and I was curious. I was hoping we were going to talk about it tonight. A lot of people are very upset at his immediate reversion back to happy-go-lucky Kofi slinging pancakes and whatnot. I believe it was Greg DeMarco who said on Twitter, like, that's his character. He's all about the power of positivity and blah, blah, blah. So I think he's the only person that I've seen defend this. but that's typical of DeMarco, so I'm not surprised. My own personal feelings are somewhere in the, not the middle, leaning more towards the angry side. It's not so much that I expected him to, like, you know, huff and puff. It's just there's a certain level of reality that I expect with the storytelling. And no matter how positive of a person you are, losing a championship in the fashion that he did will cause, at the very least, some type of reaction. And you've basically stolen that from your audience. Kofi, it's not about him being positive. It's not about him going out and, you know, trying to be the best him he can be even after this horrible loss. Where's the promo? Where's the conversation? Where's the, you know, the emotion? This doesn't, it's not like, he's not like he's pretending it didn't exist. He's pretending the title didn't, like the reign didn't even exist. Like, that's a big moment in his career, and next day he's just, you know, throwing pancakes again. It's as if it didn't happen, and that's what bugs me the most. It's just, again, just bad writing.
Liz, same question. Your thoughts on Kofi basically becoming just another tag team guy now that he's lost the title?
I mean, do we really know? I mean, I could play devil's advocate, and I don't completely agree with DeMarco, which unfortunately lately I have been finding myself agreeing with him a lot, so I probably need a psych evaluation. I mean, it could also be a product of what they have going on, you know, right now. We don't know that he's not going to suddenly, which might even make it seem even stupider, you know, suddenly come out and, you know, flip out on it or, you know, something. It could be, I mean, maybe I'm holding out hope and I'm naive. It is a little weird that he just went poof right back to what he was doing with no anger or anything. I mean, if they had him beaten so badly by you know, Brock, they should have just had him sell, you know, a fake injury or something for a bit, and in my opinion, and then come back. We had Xavier and Big E on their own, not on their own, but, you know, separate for a while, so nobody would have thought anything of it. It is a little weird to see him throwing pancakes again, but I don't know, I'll hold out hope that they're going to do something. I mean, they did the same thing with, and I know it's not the same, because it's Kofi's Kofi, and Kofi's amazing. I mean, they basically did the same thing, like, you know, with Jinder, he was champion, and then poof, he was back to, you know, nonsense. So unfortunately, there is a history and a precedence for it, but I'm going to take the stance of we're going to see what happens.
Liz, there has been sad news to break out of SmackDown. Rest in peace, wacky, waving, inflatable, arm flailing tube Ben, 2014 to 2019. What do you think of Bayley's makeover and the fact that she's women's champion again over on SmackDown?
So, true story, I was a little distracted during parts of SmackDown, no shock to anybody. And I didn't see who came in the ring, and I was watching the match, and however they were, like, Bayley's face wasn't facing my screen, so I was like, who is this? There are people complaining about our hair, which is ridiculous. It's her hair. She can do what she wants with it. I liked it. I never was really into the hugging, you know, hugger, so happy, Bayley. I'm such a big fan. I love everybody in the back. Oh, my God, this is my dream. I hated that. It nauseated me, to be completely honest. It annoyed the hell out of me. I'm all for them trying different things. And, you know, so far I enjoyed it. I hate those wavy, handy things. So I was happy they met the demise.
Tony, we've basically been following Bayley since she started in NXT, and we've stated from the start on this show that we thought that she could have been something special in the WWE. Do you think that the heel turn is what she needed to revitalize her character, or do you think that this is going to take one of their most guaranteed white meat baby faces to come out of the NXT product and throwing it away for the sake of shock value?
No, I mean, you know, it's a natural progression of a wrestler to, you know, eventually turn heel. We've had, like, maybe two wrestlers in history that never did.
So it's a nice change of pace for her. It's also a very good way for her to grow as a performer. And I like the new look. I like the symbolism of splashing her wacky, wavy, inflatable arm flailing tube men. And I mean, I even like the reaction video that's making the waves online of the little kid crying his eyes out after watching that.
Oh my God,
great.
So cute.
The immensity of the sadness of that little kid is overwhelming. I feel the same way, buddy. I'll miss the flailing tube men too. All right, let's move over to the Red Brand now as we talk about tonight's episode of Monday Night Raw. The main talking point, obviously, from tonight's episode of Monday Night Raw will be the draft here. And Liz, I'm going to let you go first here because I know there was one draft pick in particular that you're going to want to discuss and a certain opportunity that you had over the course of the last weekend. So
listen, it's probably so few people are probably excited about this, but my crazy self and my wrestling friends know me so well that within seconds of them saying Jinder was drafted to Raw, I got 5 messages. They came in boop, boop, boop right in. You were actually the last one, Harry. Patrick, like 5 people messaged me all at once. It was hysterical. I don't know what that says about my fangirl levelness, but I thought it was hysterical. I mean, he's still injured from what he was saying at Comic-Con. He's still months away, so I found that interesting. Maybe he was lying. I don't know. Could be. They've done that in the past, so who knows when he'll be back. But they drafted Drew as well, who's still out, and Joe, who's sitting there with a cast type thing on his arm. But yes, Lizzie was happy.
With the depth of talent on Monday Night Raw, on the Monday Night Raw roster, though, I think you can take your time in bringing McIntyre, Joe, and Jinder back into the mix there. Tony, was there any draft pick in particular that surprised you by this person went to this show or this person went to that show?
Not a single one.
You're so helpful. You know that?
Yep,
yeah, but how many really went somewhere new? I mean, most of them, I mean, I can't really say most, but the majority of
you know
them went to where they already were.
The biggest surprise to me was Humberto Carrillo getting drafted because, frankly, he seemed like just another dude on 205 to me. I don't get it. I mean, Aiden English was obsessed with him, but other than that, and I can't tell you how far behind I am on 205 Live now. Because everything that I hear say that show's making its slow march towards death anyway.
Yeah, well.
All right, let's talk about. Do you have anything to add, Tony?
Oh, no. No, not at all.
Anybody got time for that?
All right, and then let's talk about the marquee matchup from tonight's episode of Monday Night Raw. Let's talk about our opening contest, which saw the man, Becky Lynch, taking on Sasha. No, she's not. Sasha's not here. She's still hurt from Hell in a Cell. That or she may have lain down on backstage locker room and thrown another temper tantrum when she found out she wasn't getting the belt. Anyway, instead, Becky takes on Charlotte in the opening contest for tonight's episode of Monday Night Raw as they renew hostilities here. Is it just me, Tony, or did Charlotte come off a lot better in this match than she has recently? And do you credit Becky for that?
No, I think the first half of that match was actually pretty average. I didn't see a lot of skill. When he came back from the commercial, it was a lot better. But if you're comparing the last couple of weeks to this one, then yeah, she did better.
Liz, your thoughts on Becky picking up a clean victory over Charlotte here? Are you surprised that they're not beating champions on a regular basis? Because that seems to be their MO. Especially now that they're on the same show, too.
No, I was glad she lost because I can't stand her. I think she, in terms of what you asked Tony, I don't think the match was anything, you know, the second half was definitely better. But I think in terms of speaking, I found her better. I think she spoke better today than I've heard her, recently. But, I don't really care about seeing them, have another feud, to be honest.
All right. One other quick question here from tonight's episode of Raw, and then we'll go into quick hits, because this is something that I felt the need to discuss here because it annoyed the fuck out of me, and I'm curious as to whether or not you guys had the same reaction that I did. Liz, on a scale of 1 to 10, how stupid was Natalya picking Lacey Evans as her tag team partner tonight when Beth Phoenix was in the building?
You know, I thought it was going to be Beth. I guess everybody did when she was saying that. And I know in one chat I was over like, oh, it's Rhonda. It's Rhonda, which would have been pretty cool. But it was weird. I could think everybody would have been such a huge pop if it was Beth. I didn't understand the rationale behind it, but I mean, who else was there that she would have picked?
Well, apparently Liv Morgan's been drafted, so there's that option. And Natalya's had kind of a mentor protege thing with Dana Brooke before.
That's true. Thank you for educating me on that. I completely forgot about that. Wow, they really seem to be like, I think Lacey's going to be the next one that people complain that they're pushing down their throats.
Looking at some of the names that we didn't see in the draft here, and a couple of people pop out to me, I just wanted to get your guys' thoughts on where you think they would fit better, and then we'll go into quick hits here. Tony, where do the Usos belong? SmackDown against the Revival or Monday Night Raw against the Viking Raiders?
Wednesday Night Dynamite.
You son of a bitch. Greg said we're not allowed to discuss that on this show because him and that Brittany chick have it covered, apparently.
Oh, he's under the impression that this isn't my show. I'll talk about whatever I want.
But we can't mention that show?
I'm just...
No, he's being suspicious.
Rusev can go anywhere. I mean, look, maybe it's because of the past. Maybe it's because of the past show. This draft doesn't mean shit to me. I know that we're sticking to the brands now, so basically, just show me what you got. You know, that this wasn't an impressive Raw to me. This was actually a very, very, it was very hard to get through. It was a chore for me tonight. So if this is yet another restart for the WWE, then okay, let's start fresh next week and see what's up, because tonight wasn't it. So Rusev on SmackDown, Rusev on Raw, it doesn't matter to me. Just give me a good fucking product. I'll tell you right now, the storyline that he's involved in is not going to help. So does it really matter if he's on the blue brand or the red brand? If we're
Tony is so pissed off about Rusev that his call just dropped, Liz.
Did Tony hang up on us?
I think Tony hung up on us. I don't think he hung up on us. I think he just lost signal wherever he is. He'll call back.
No, I know. I know. I was joking.
Speaking of relationship angles that are going to end up not paying off for shit here, Mike Kanellis has asked for – oh, Tony's back. We'll talk more about that in a second. Go ahead. You were complaining about Rusev and Lashley, Tony.
Yeah. Well, you know, the less said about the segment, the better. I think I even wrote in the report, Lana has a spa segment. It's stupid, and that's it. I don't want to give it any more of my time. But you asked the question about Rusev. So regardless of what show he ends on, if he's stuck in this storyline, then, you know, it doesn't really matter.
Speaking of segments where men are being basically cucked and have no response for it, Mike Kanellis has reportedly asked for his release from the WWE. It would have been nice if he'd have done this before this segment started, so that way none of us had to actually fucking sit through them.
Yeah, that would have been great.
I'm sorry.
I like Mike Bennett as a performer. I enjoyed his work as the Miracle Mike Bennett in TNA/Impact Wrestling. But to classify him as anything less than a disappointment in the WWE would be asinine. You were about to say something, Liz?
No, sorry. No, I mean, part of me wonders if it's actually extra release or it's going to turn into, I guess maybe I'm jaded, like you turn into some type of, you know, storyline thing. But you know, he was saying about, you know, all the, I retweeted something that I don't know who wrote, and I can't remember when they were saying that, you know, he wrote about being on the road and his daughter seeing him stressed, you know, or something like that. But these are all issues that he brought on, you know, himself. So, you know, people can't be blaming the company for it. And if all the stuff that they said is true, that has, you know, been said where they were a little bit shady and whatever, if the company did some, you know, weird punishing, you know, of them type of thing, then, you know, I'm sorry, but, you know, they kind of deserved it, even though that storyline was fucking torture for all of us.
Let's hit quick hits for tonight's episode of Monday Night Raw. After Andrade goes in the first round to Monday Night Raw, Andrade then faces Ali on tonight's episode here. Zelina Vega provides the difference as a Tope Con Hilo takes out Andrade at ringside, but then a flying head scissors off the apron by Zelina after Ali sends Andrade back inside leads to Andrade catching the Hammerlock DDT for the victory. Apparently, we're back on the push Andrade bandwagon. Tony, are you okay with this?
Yeah, I love that guy. I think he's great. They had a great match tonight. The crowd was invested. He was a good heel. He had his, you know, business partner help out. I enjoyed it.
Liz, where do you think the limit is for Andrade and Zelina on Raw?
What do you mean, where do I think the limit is? I don't understand the question.
Do you see him as a mid-carder? Do you see him as somebody that they could slot into the main event? Or do you see him as somebody that's going to end up in the lower parts of the card like he was tonight when only the second match on the show?
For me, I probably see him mid-card, especially based on the quality of his matches. I always had a hard time grasping the concept of, oh, his match is first or second. So, you know, they don't really think of him, you know, so highly, when these days we see all sorts of matches all throughout the show. So I don't really pay too much attention to that. Maybe it's stupid of me, but I never really did. I don't see him as somebody that's going to be on the lower, you know, the C list, basically. Definitely more of mid-carder and possibly in the future higher.
The Minnesota Viking Raiders of Oakland are now the Raw Tag Team Champions, having taken the titles off of Dolph Ziggler and Robert Roode and shooting their asses over to SmackDown, where they can continue to be irrelevant. Eric Rowan ended up drafted to Monday Night Raw during the course of this year, and Larry, actually, in his Raw report over on 411 Mania, throws out the possibility of Viking Raiders versus Harper and Rowan for the Raw Tag Team titles. I got to say, the concept intrigues me. What did you think of the match, Liz, and where do you think the Viking Raiders go from here now that they're done with the squashes and they're the Raw Tag Team Champions?
I have a feeling that they're going to hold them for a while. I didn't think that Roode and Ziggler were going to hold on to them, you know, indefinitely. Maybe, you know, surprising to some, since the Viking Raiders had so many of their dumb squash matches for so long, and I think there's some people out there that are complaining that the Revival don't have them, or they're going to feud with the Revival or whatever. I have to go look. I'd like to see them hold on to it for a while. I'd rather see an actual tag team hold on to them than a makeshift one that I don't think is going to be together for much longer.
Tony, I believe your exact quote in your Raw report was, well, at least the belts are back on a real team.
Yeah, sounds like something I'd say.
What do you make of the Viking Raiders' future as the Raw Tag Team Champions? Is there anything any particular team of interest that strike you as possibly being challengers down the road? I know we talked about AOP. I just mentioned Harper and Rowan. Is there anybody else that might possibly strike you as potential challengers for the Viking Raiders down the road?
Not particularly. The match was good. Every match that they've had has been good. They're really good, you know, and I'm glad that they've been able to show that they're good. Thankfully, they kind of had better opponents tonight. The match was pretty solid. If they continue to have matches like they did tonight, people are going to believe the title win to be something of note. So I'm hoping that they're going that route because they're a relatively new team. They tried to – I mean, if you looked at them in Heavy Machinery about 2 months ago, you would basically say they're
doing the same shit. They were having the same push. The difference is Eric and Ibar have some legit skill set that you just have, you don't see or you haven't seen in a long time. They're big. They're both big, and they're both, you know, moving around pretty, like, really agile. They're putting in the effort. So I'm cool with the title win, especially considering I have zero interest in Rude and Ziggler as a team or by themselves. So I'm hoping that it brings value to the belt, but also to the wrestlers. You know, that's what it's supposed to do. And I think that it's a good team to test some stuff out on.
Promo time for the Viking Raiders after the match, and it actually comes off pretty decent here, although they do need to lose the Fiend lighting. That red lighting is very distracting, especially since we see it in other parts of the show. You mentioned that you liked the name of Aleister Black's finish, Tony. What did you think of the match that he had with Eric Young here, and are you okay with them using established names to portray Aleister as a big deal on Monday Night Raw, such as the Singh brothers last week and then Eric Young this week?
Yeah, I'll take that over literally any squash match that he could have. Eric Young isn't such a big name that it matters, but it doesn't feel like a nothing match. It's a squash for sure, but it's not a nothing match, you know? And also it's a showcase in this particular case, it's Aleister showcasing his abilities. You also notice that when you have an established person, they get the least amount of offense in, but they still get offense in. This won't last long for me, obviously. If there's another squash match next week, then I'm really not all that interested. You got the point across tonight. There's no reason to do it again. Let's move forward.
What do you think of the Ormtrub Dragon Sleeper finish that he's been employing as kind of a secondary finish to go with the Black Mass?
I'm cool with it. I like secondary finishers. I like multiple finishers, you know, just kind of gives you a little bit of a, you know, when you do what I do, you know this, Harry. You could telegraph almost every match. I can write a John Cena match right now, and it could be almost to the T of what we would watch, you know, if he had one. So a secondary finisher for me is a nice little change of pace, because just when you think the kick's about to come, like we saw tonight, it doesn't. And then you're like, oh, shit, okay, cool. So it kind of keeps you on your toes, catches you off guard. And kayfabe-wise, it catches the wrestler off guard too, your opponent. So I'm cool with it. I like it.
Liz, your thoughts on Aleister Black's beating of Eric Young in less than 2 minutes tonight and the arm track dragon sleeper finish that Aleister's been using these last 2 weeks? I know you didn't get to talk about it last week here on the show.
Yeah, no, I like the finisher. I much prefer when they have a wider arsenal of moves. I don't think they need to use the same finisher to win every single match, especially if it's something that's pretty explosive or complicated or, you know, something like that. I think it loses some of its luster and excitement after a bit. I'm not really, this is going to sound harsh and I apologize. I don't really care that he beat Eric Young. I mean, when was the last time we saw Eric Young? Obviously, we all should know who Eric Young is, but we can't say, oh, like, he beat, like, such a name. Or even the Singhs, and I love the Singhs, and not just because they were with gender. I love that gimmick. I think they're hysterical. I follow their social media, and they're, like, really funny. So as much as, like, you know who they are, it's not like they were, like, 10-time, you know, tag team champions or anything that, you know, he beat. It made sense that he beat them. They are still, in a sense, a, you know, a comedy team, you know, to a degree. Eric's not, of course, not, you know, the comedy. It wasn't really a shock that they chose any of them to me for him to beat, be it a squash or not.
All right, we move on with a couple more of the draft picks here, and then we kind of see the beginning of the seeds being planted for the Street Profits to be in-ring performers on Monday Night Raw as they get jumped by the Good Brothers, Tony. You've been saying for weeks that you got kind of sick of the Street Profits shtick as hype men backstage. Now that they're transitioning towards the ring here, and it seems like they're setting up a six-man tag match for next week's episode of Raw, what is your interest level in seeing the Street Profits in the ring on Monday Night Raw as opposed to just being hype men?
Thank God. I need them to wrestle. They can do their promos and what. Did you notice the distinct difference between the promo when they were talking about how they were going to
you know, how they wanted the smoke versus everything else that they've done. That's the focus that you need. That's what we're watching for. We want wrestlers that are invested in wrestling and their own personal characters, and that's what we finally got. Why would these two guys care about anything else happening on Raw? Not that they shouldn't, but like at the level that they were caring about stuff, this is what I wanted. This is what the direction that I want to see. This is the wrestling that I want to see. So I'm actually really excited for it.
Liz, same question. What's your interest level in seeing the Street Profits as in-ring performers on Monday Night Raw as opposed to just hyping?
Oh, I'm definitely all for it. I like them. I think they're talented. I find them entertaining. But their backstage shtick has run its course. It was always like this weird little recap thing to make them, I don't want to use the word relevant, but I guess maybe to give them something to do or show them off. I mean, I thought I for the most part, some weeks they feel a little flat, but most weeks I enjoy them. But I think it's time to put them back in the ring.
Ricochet and Shelton Benjamin is basically a showcase for Ricochet, although Shelton does get some token offense in here. We've seen Ricochet as the U.S. champion before, Liz. Do you think he's somebody that could eventually make that leap into the main event scene on Monday Night Raw, or do you think he's destined to be one of those IC U.S. title guys?
I don't know. That's a tough call. I think he's somebody the fans definitely want to see as a champion on some higher level. Whether or when he's given the opportunity, it will be the interesting question. They seem pretty high on him, in my opinion. So, I mean, they have how many people now that they're juggling around? So, I think it's just a waiting game.
Tony, what's Ricochet's ceiling in the WWE? Do you think he's a future heavyweight champion, or do you think he's going to be one of those IC US title guys?
Yeah, I don't think he's ever going to get the big belt. But he's going to, I mean, he's great.
I think Ricochet's going to be kind of like that Kofi Kingston guy. He may eventually get a championship run down the road, but I don't think he's ever going to be viewed as anything other than a guy to make other people look good. And when you think about it, none of the major feuds that he's had so far have come out with him on the positive side of it. The only real marquee feud that he's had in the WWE was the AJ Styles feud, and that definitely ended with AJ on top.
Yeah.
Tyson Fury and Braun Strowman sign a contract. Braun breaks a table. Tyson Fury breaks a pen. I break away from Monday Night Raw to check in on the Monday Night Football game. Honest, that's what happened. I switched over to the game because I didn't care. This isn't going to be a crown jewel rant. This isn't going to be a you shouldn't watch this show because such and such happened and Jamal Khashoggi happened and yada, yada, yada happened and they're paying themselves off. No, I get that it's a business. I get that it's a business decision. That's fine. That doesn't mean I have to be interested in the matches that are happening there. And this is one of the matches that's happening there. To a lesser extent, Brock and Kane, although I'm a little bit more interested by that because there's an actual story to tell there. Tyson Fury and Braun Strowman is going to be about who hits harder, and frankly, I don't care to see somebody who's not going to be around on a regular basis after the Crown Jewel show standing tall over a professional wrestler. And usually in situations like this, the entertainer, the sports entertainer ends up doing the favors for the outside athlete. Scale of 1 to 10, Liz, Tyson Fury interest level.
Negative 500. I know it's true. I'm not even being snarky. I missed the whole thing and I didn't pay attention to recaps because it bored me. You've seen it before. I think my beloved Jinder had it too. It's Gronk or whoever or whatever his name is. Like he's in the stands. They got annoyed. Then they had a fight. I mean, it's been done before and it's never been entertaining. The only time it's been remotely entertaining is when it's actually another wrestler, you know, like when the, you know, Wolfpack went to the end, you know, went to WCW, you know, when Scott Hall was showing up in the stands in the seats, and you're like, oh shit, this is wild, this is interesting, this is boring as shit. He's another person. I didn't know who the fuck he was. I have no idea who he was. And I think for the fans like me, I don't watch boxing. I don't watch the UFC. I don't care that Punk is there. I don't care that Hager was there. And I'm a huge Jack Swagger fan. I don't watch it. You know, wonderful for all the guys that go back and forth, wonderful for all the guys that do it as a profession. More power to them. I don't know them, so I don't connect with, like, oh, holy shit, it's, you know, Tyson Fury. I had no idea who he was. I had no idea why the hell he would be pissed off at Braun for Braun getting in his face. The whole thing just makes literally no sense. And I, like you said, the Kane Brock one has a background to it, at least. This one's just some stupid nonsense out of the blue. And you're going to see Braun, another somebody they built it, and who is this huge monster I have to lay down for a non-wrestler. That aggravates me more than the Kane Brock, because at least Kane Brock have a history, and Kane already beat Brock's ass, apparently. You know, so that, okay, he did it again. You're making your champion look ridiculous if that happens, but, you know, whatever. So I have no interest in it whatsoever.
Tony, Tyson Fury, Braun Strowman, thoughts?
Nope. He broke a pen tonight, Harry. He broke a pen.
I know I used this one early in the show, but I feel... I know I used this one earlier in the show, but I feel it appropriate again right now.
Anybody got time for that?
By the way, for those wondering if you're into football, the Lions got fucked tonight. Just saying. All right, let's move on. Buddy Murphy and Cedric Alexander had a shorter version of the matches that they used to kill with on 205 Live. They once again kill, though, having a very good match where Buddy Murphy stands tall, pinning Cedric with Murphy's Law. Tony, Buddy Murphy, he's one of those guys that he seems to be one of those Triple H guys, so I feel like he could be somebody that we talk about in the future here. But he's another one of those Ricochet ICUS title guys, right? He's never going to get a run with a big strap.
I mean, I don't want to say never about anybody, but, I mean, except for maybe Ricochet. But
Cesaro.
Yeah. Oh, Cesaro. He would be such a great asshole champion.
He really would.
But as far as Murphy goes, yeah, I think it's more possible than Ricochet.
I don't think Cesaro's ever been a heavyweight champion in any company in America. I'm trying to think about
really,
I don't
strongly
believe.
Feel that he would do amazing.
The only promotion where it may have happened is Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, and I don't think it happened there. Cesaro.
That's not cool.
Liz, your thoughts on Buddy Murphy, and now that he's actually going to be interacting with the big lads instead of the cruiserweights. I mean, he's been doing it on SmackDown, but now that he's on Raw.
I hate his pants. Can I say that? I mean, no, it means nothing, but I hate his pants. I hate them. It looks stupid because I'm such a fashion plate. I mean, it's the same thing we've been saying about Ricochet and whoever the hell, Andrade, whoever we've been talking about. It's, you never know. I mean, and that's the thing with any of them. You can ask me, you can ask Tony, you can ask Andrew, you can ask Greg, who will, you know, I love you, Greg, but he's right. You just don't know. You don't know who's going to connect. You don't know who they're going to decide to push. You don't know who's going to get hurt that forces somebody else to be like, okay, well, you know, this is your shot. Take it, you know. And a lot of these guys do get a shot and just don't, you know, it doesn't work. It doesn't, they can't hack it. I don't want to say they can't hack it. That's not nice. But, you know, it doesn't click. It doesn't go as, you know, maybe they'd want to. There's too many variables. And, you know, really, what do we know? We can speculate. We can assume based on our years of watching this crap. But, you know, we don't know. Buddy, Ricochet, Andrade, they all have, you know, the talent. I think out of the three of them, Ricochet probably has more of the complete package with his perfect eyebrows that annoy me there. But it's just another thing of he has the talent, he's done it a bit, and you know, you see what happens.
See, of the three of them, I think the most likely to actually get a run with the heavyweight title would be Andrade, because I think Andrade is more of a complete package in terms of the whole presentation. Andrade has the in-ring ability. Andrade can cut a promo. Andrade's English is getting better, which was the biggest knock on him. But his English is getting better, and he has Zelina to talk for him. I think the problem for Ricochet is an awful promo. And Ricochet has made no bones about it that he is a bad promo. Buddy Murphy doesn't get a whole lot of mic time, so we're not entirely sure what Buddy Murphy is capable of. We've seen flashes of brilliance on 205 Live, but how will that translate to the larger market? Let's move on here. I mentioned the fact that the thing that Lacey Evans as the mystery partner for Natalya pissed me off earlier, but it was eventually something that I got over because the match itself was actually not too bad here. The Kabuki Warriors yet again picking up another victory, Tony. Asuka and Kairi are looking strong as the women's tag team champions. Somewhere, the Iconics are wondering, where was this for us?
No, they weren't. No, the Lacey choice was, it was just, like, it's not offensive enough to bug me wholly, but it's just bad writing. You could have made this good writing. It could have been something good, you know, but for Natty to come out and just say, like, oh, she pushed me to my limits, so that's why she's my partner, it just comes off as so tacky. It's just not... It's a plot device used for the sake of a one-off match, you know. And if they are turning Lacey face, this could have been done a lot better, and it wouldn't have taken that long either, you know. It could have been done with a backstage segment. It could have been done. Just this one just didn't sit well, and I'm sure I'm not the only one. It just comes off like not fully formed. Why is Natalya no longer a nasty? You know, because she wrestled well, because she beat her. How did that change the outlook that Lacey has on her as a woman? You know, this wasn't a wrestling, you're better than me, I'm better than you. This is Lacey ridding the WWE of nasties and Natalya just not liking her. So that doesn't click. If these were two wrestlers that wrestled their asses off continuously, they had an amazing last man standing match, then it would have made a little more sense and I could have, you know, bought into that. This, as it stands, is just not, just more of the same.
Liz, what did you make of the women's tag team match that more or less main evented the show?
I mean, it wasn't a horrible match. I actually enjoyed, you know, the match. I loved Asuka's, face paint. But yeah, I mean, I'm with everybody else. Nobody expected Lacey to come out. The reasoning behind it, I guess we'll find out. Was it a last minute decision? I don't know. You know, like you said before, there were other people, you made me realize there were other people that would have made more sense, because unfortunately I forgot about those people for a moment. But I don't know. I guess we'll see. It's probably going to be something done where they made dumb, probably, where they made friends for 10 seconds, and then Lacey's going to beat her up.
We're really happy that you're our friend, but this is the place where the funhouse ends. For the second time in his career, something that Bray Wyatt loves has been lit on fire. Really got to avoid that. Tony, do you think this was done to finally go away from the Firefly Funhouse segments, or do you think we'll eventually see a darker Firefly Funhouse with the burn marks intact?
I don't really know. I just know that I didn't like it. I think that Bray Wyatt has a firm control on his character. I think that he had a fully mapped out plan for how he wanted to portray it. And I think, as with most creative things, more hands touch the pot, and it gets a little messy. We kind of lost the thread between reality and insanity, and it got blurry to the point where we didn't, you know, we can describe it. We can say who the Fiend is and who Bray Wyatt is, and we could say that this is all in his mind. But the minute that you allowed Seth to enter, it's no longer in his mind. You know what I mean? It's not something that we can no longer use that as an excuse. We can no longer say, oh, this is Bray Wyatt's mind,
these are characters he created to cope with his severe anger issues. Now it's legitimately a set, and he's not Mr. Rogers. He's some psycho talking to puppets that he voices. And then you look at the production value of the segment, where you have literal sound effects for the punching that Seth is doing. And you have voiceovers and people crying and the rabbit still talking. And it blurs the line between reality and fiction in a way that you never should, because it makes the entire segment unbelievable and leaves more questions than answers. Really, what took me over the edge was the punching sound effects. There was no reason for that. How does that even make sense in any way that you can describe this character? How does those sound effects make any sense? If this was in Bray's mind, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I don't even want to try to analyze it. I just know that it was dumb, and it was dumb.
Liz, how do you think about the way we went off air for Monday Night Raw tonight?
It was definitely a little weird. I'm kind of wondering where they go with it, as I guess everybody is. I'm wondering if they get so much backlash that they try to make it into some type of like crazy dream sequence or something. I don't know. I was surprised they burned it down. It seemed very cheesy. I don't know. It seemed even a little weirder than, I don't know, like hazy, you know, whatever, or whiny or whatever. They just gave it this odd feeling. I personally love the rabbit screaming throughout it. I don't know why. He was the best part of it. Because even Seth's, I'm so sorry, my mouth is so dry tonight. Even Seth's punches looked weird. You know, I was expecting like the Batman pow zap, you know, thing to fly across the screen. It was definitely an odd ending. I guess we'll just have to wait and see how they twist it next week.
I am like 90% sure that if they would have done Batman Visions on the television screen, Tony would have rage quit this show before we even started recording tonight. Okay, so we don't really discuss what happened on Wednesdays, but this past Wednesday was actually a major wrestling memory moment here. So before we get into our final reaction for both Raw and SmackDown here, favorite Eddie Guerrero memory, Tony?
Oh, man, I can't answer that question. Eddie was my favorite for a very long time. Not after he passed away, like in the current product. Just watching him in the show, it was like, oh, man, I couldn't wait for SmackDown. I mean, the SmackDown 6, you know, was great, but I couldn't wait for Eddie. Even the times where I felt he – you know how I complain about Rey Mysterio intersplicing Spanish with his promos like he did tonight? Like, the only person that I saw get away with it was Eddie. His ability to – because that wasn't him trying to cater to a particular section of the crowd. That was just how he talked. It was like if you were to go out and eat with him, I can only imagine that he would do that there too, or, you know, chilling or talking or whatever. Like, that's just how he was. Of course, that's not true. You know, he's obviously a dad, a husband, a person who probably did not talk like that on a daily basis. But the fact is, I believed it. I believed that he was that person. That was a big loss for me. That was a huge, huge wrestling loss. So I can't give you one moment.
Liz, okay, then if you don't want to do a specific moment, Liz, same question. Your memories of Eddie Guerrero?
I adored Eddie. I watched him in WCW and wherever else. I remember when he came to the WWE, I think that was probably one of my first moments of truly walking out. I remember him walking out onto the stage, and even back then, this is back in the, I'm aging myself here, people. This is back in the day of, you know, AOL, and I was on the And so it's to show how long I've known Kim. And I remember both of us just freaking out. I adored him. If anybody, I think he's probably, as much as I loved Shawn Michaels and whoever else, I think he was the first one that I could probably say I really fangirled over. To the point that when he died, Kim actually heard about it first, and she called my house. And now, to put this into perspective, Kim's father is a quadriplegic. So when she called me, she's like, I need you to sit down. I have something very bad to tell you. So of course I'm thinking like, oh my God, her father, right? And she told me about Eddie. I think we must have cried on the phone for like 2 hours. I can't pick one match. There's just like so many moments. He was just so entertaining. And I mean, we all know about his demons and overcoming them and whatever. I probably know more about them since Vicky is writing a book, but I don't think she's the type that's going to, you know, like trash him or anything at all. He was just something special. He had this personality, and like, you know, Tony said, you know, the way he spoke going back and forth between, you know, English and Spanish, you know, growing up where, you know, where I'm from, a lot of people spoke like that. So it was like very, and he was just like very natural with it. And I mean, he had that grin, you know, he had that mischievous grin that, you know, that just, this boyish charm about him that you could not resist.
Wrestling can be an emotional sport sometimes, even if it's just a pseudo sport to most people. I've only cried once watching professional wrestling. It is the Monday Night Raw after my buddy Jeremy, who longtime listeners of the show will know I've been friends with for a decade and a half. We would talk via text message every night. We still do pretty much every day, talk by text. And this was back in a time where I lived in a household where my parents didn't allow professional wrestling in the house when I was living at home. So I would go to the public libraries and I would sit and I would watch the episodes of Raw and SmackDown on YouTube or on through streaming channels, through like all those old illegal recorders. You would have to download the MP4 files and watch them through like real audio or real video or whatever the fuck the format was back then. And he messaged me about it when it happened. And he said that they turned that episode, that night's episode of Monday Night Raw, into an Eddie Guerrero tribute show. It was the next day after that Raw. It would have been the 15th of November, 2005. And I'm sitting in the library, and the Eddie Guerrero montage plays. Vince comes out and says what he says. And then they go to the Hurt video by Johnny Cash. And that video, the Eddie Career highlights to the song Hurt by Johnny Cash, is the only time I have ever cried watching pro wrestling. You are missed, Eduardo Gory Guerrero Lanis. And you will never be forgotten. Let's go to the final reactions for both Raws that I've done here. MVP for Raw, Tony.
I'm going to give it to let's just give it to Cedric and Buddy Murphy. Had a good match. I enjoyed it.
Liz?
I'm going to give it to Ali because I really enjoyed a lot of his action in the match. I loved when he jumped over, what's her face now?
Zelina.
Zelina, yeah, sorry, I'm half asleep.
I'm going to go with Becky Lynch. Strong match against Charlotte, more than held up her end of the bargain. And Becky comes off as a true superstar in the women's division right now, which is something that they're few and far between in without Ronda Rousey's presence. MVP for SmackDown, Tony.
Shit, I had it too. I'm gonna give it to
Fuck, I'll give it to Roman Reigns.
Liz?
I'm going to go with Tony. I want to give it to Roman because I think they had a really good match.
I'm going to go with Bayley and the reestablishing of her character and the fact that she got the Women's Championship back here. And frankly, I think she needs it more right now than Charlotte does because Charlotte's had the belt so many times. But Bayley, now that she's reestablishing herself as a new character, needs that belt to help lend some more credibility to the reestablishment. Favorite match or moment of the week, Tony?
The
this
tag
could be
match
either
tonight.
Raw or SmackDown.
Yeah, the tag match tonight.
The Viking Raiders, where they won the tag titles?
Yep.
Okay. Liz, favorite match or moment from Raw or SmackDown?
Just because I'm such a Shield fangirl, I'm going to go with Roman and Seth.
I'm going to go with Ricochet and Shelton Benjamin. I thought that Shelton had a very strong accommodating of himself here, and Ricochet basically proved that he is a video game character with the way that he was able to land on his feet off of that attempt at the overhead belly-to-belly off of the turnbuckles by Shelton. Greg Watry for the week, Tony.
Lana.
Liz.
Wait, what was the question? The worst thing of the week?
Yes, your least favorite match or moment, the Greg Watry of
Lana.
The week.
Lana.
I'm going to go with those stupid draft room clips. I'm going to go with those dumbass draft room clips. I thought they were dumb and they didn't add anything to the moment. And
they
basically just served to make everything
stupid.
The only funny thing was to me was seeing the Fox football robot kind of celebrating with the team, too.
Oh, I was just going to ask you what the hell that was.
That was the Fox football robot. I actually have a Buffalo Bills one of that robot here in the apartment. My ex's mother got it for me for Christmas a couple of years back.
Oh yeah, I don't watch football, so I'm like, why the hell do they have a robot? I want a robot.
Overall show rating for Raw and SmackDown, Tony.
SmackDown, I think I gave it a 7. Raw tonight was a 4. It sucks because we had good wrestling on tonight.
Liz, show ratings.
SmackDown, I'm going to go 7.5 because it gave us some good stuff. I mean, the draft stuff was crappy on Raw, but the wrestling for me overshadowed it, so I'm going to give it a nice, I'll be generous on it because I didn't hate it. I'll give it a 7.
I'm at the same score Liz is for SmackDown. I gave SmackDown a 7.5. I really enjoyed the Seth and Roman match until the crap finish, but that we kind of saw that one coming. I really enjoyed the Bayley and Charlotte match. I thought Bayley got to look as good as she's looked in her time on the main roster in the WWE. So I'm going to go with a 7.5 for SmackDown. For Raw tonight, I'm going to give it a 6. I don't think it was as good as SmackDown. I think the fact that they have to fill an extra hour of content hurts as well because you lose some of the crowd's hyperness, some of the crowd's involvement there. And you could definitely tell that this crowd was getting more and more deflated as the show went on. The women's tag team match that main evented basically the show was, in my opinion, a pretty decent match, but the crowd did not give a fuck at all. And I just think that's the disadvantage of them having the extra hour on Monday night. Any NXT AEW thoughts here real quick before we get out of here? Tony?
Not really.
Looking forward to Jericho and Darby Allin this week on AEW. And it'll be nice to see Tommaso Ciampa back in the ring for the first time in almost a calendar year. When he takes on Angel Garza on NXT as well. I watch both shows on Wednesday. I watch NXT Live, and then I flip over and catch the AEW replay at 10 o'clock there. Tony, you were watching regularly during the Monday Night Wars. Did you watch both shows on the same night, or did you end up flipping back and forth?
No, I stopped watching WCW for a long time. But when I did want to watch it, I had a friend that would record every episode on VHS. He was a nut. I loved it.
Liz, same question, because you came up during the Monday Night Wars era as well.
I threw my age in there, right there, Harry. No,
I'm not, because Tony's younger than you are.
I'm teasing. For the longest time, I flipped back and forth, especially during Hall and Nash first going there, when the NWA started to get like so crowded and convoluted, and it was, you know, clearly sinking. I didn't so much. Plus, I think I'm not really aging myself, but I think I was kind of in college or almost in college at that point. So I was busy. There was some times where I mainly just followed it online, but for a long time I went back and forth.
I wasn't allowed to watch wrestling during the Monday Night War. My parents were very strongly anti-wrestling. However, what I'm doing now is I'm going back and I'm rewatching the episodes of Raw and Nitro that consisted of the Monday Night War. I'm watching Raw first and then I'm watching Nitro after, because Eric Bischoff is a dick and likes to give away results on Monday Nitro. So I'm making sure I watch Raw first so Bischoff can't spoil anything for me some 20 years later. Asshole.
That's sad. That's sad that you have to worry about spoilers 20 years later.
I mean, I understand why Bischoff did it, though. They were in a battle. They were head,
no,
neck
Harry,
and neck with the WWE.
You're the one that has the issue, not Eric Bischoff 20 years ago.
That's not nice.
I'm sorry, but it's true.
Next week, Andrew Balazs will be back in this chair. Don't worry, everyone. We both know that's not true. All right, that's going to wrap it up for us. I want to thank everybody for listening there. We hope you enjoy the show. Eventually, we would like to get people to start calling in. Tony, if you want to, you can start including the number in the Raw report over on 411 Mania. Show.
Sure. I can do that.
For those of you who don't know, 914-803-4532 is the number to call into the show. Be forewarned. Be ready to have a conversation when you get on the air. And if you waste our time, I will hang up. As Jim Rome used to say on his talk show, have a take and don't suck. Well, you know, Tony, you know.
Yeah, you know.
You know. Liz is probably confused as fuck. I have to explain it to her later. For the co-hostess with the mostest, Miss Liz Puglisi, and the Down Since Day One co-host, Tony Acero, I'm Harry Broadhurst. This has been The Reaction here on the Chair Shot Radio Network. We'll see you guys next Monday night at 11:30 p.m. as we continue the road to Crown Jewel and, I guess, kind of, sort of, Survivor Series, maybe-ish. We'll see. Thanks for listening, everybody. Tony, send us home.
Deuces, bitches.
Okay, so I want to ask you, Liz. We're not actually off the air yet. I actually want to ask you. Why don't you go ahead and tell everybody about your experience at New York City Comic Con?
I had a great time. Comic Con was great. I was there Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. It was packed. Saturday was probably the most packed. Thursday was actually more crowded than Friday, which was weird. But so Thursday I got there. So somebody, the amazing Harry, a few days before I went to Comic-Con, let me know that Jinder Mahal would be appearing there. So your crazy co-hostess with the mostest ran around to all the different booths that he said on his Instagram that he would be at. Because most of them, like, you had to, like, sign up beforehand. Or I didn't care about purchasing something, but you had to, like, sign up. So Entertainment Earth, you had to go to their booth to find out. You had to register online for the chance to win an opportunity to get online to get his autograph. But the autograph would be free if you did that. At Boom Entertainment, there was like a really nice picture, which I would have lost. But the publishing booth, I love books. So the publishing booth was nice and easy. I bought the book on Thursday and then had to lug it back. It's a heavy-ass book on Friday. To get the pleasure of meeting Jinder Mahal. He had a nice turnout, which I think a lot of people would be surprised about because they're morons. He was a doll. He was a sweetheart. Got to talk to him for a couple of seconds. really, really nice guy, extremely tall. Hall and Nash were there. I did not meet them as I had planned to, because that whole section was a mess. Nash is huge in person, though. I was standing next to him at one point when he was doing something else. The man's, freaking huge. Comic-Con is just... I was really annoyed because I forgot Kane was going to be there signing his books, because I would have done that. I completely forgot. But overall, it was great. There was a lot of wrestling fans. There was a guy dressed as the Ultimate Warrior. There was a guy dressed as Finn. Quite a few Adam Coles. A couple of AJ Styles. You know, it's kind of fun. It's like, my friend actually said to me, was like, what does wrestling have to do with Comic-Con? And I had to explain to him that there is such a large crossover between the fans. I went to some great panels. I did not get into the AEW panel. I went to line up, but it was in one of the smaller rooms, and the line was ridiculous. So I decided not to even get on the line. But that was supposed to be a great panel.
Real quick here, who was the NXT superstar that people were dressing up as?
Adam Cole. Exactly. There were so many people going, baby. It was hysterical. A lot of Too Sweet going on. But there's one guy. I wish I was able to get a picture of him, but I saw him as I was walking toward the Javits Center. He was dressed as the Ultimate Warrior. Now, listen, major props to these people who want to go around running around in their underwear, basically. He looked so much like the Ultimate Warrior. It was crazy. I wish I had gotten a picture of him. The guy that was dressed as Finn had on all white. Unless, you're a wrestling fan, you wouldn't have known who he was. But it was great. I learned a lot of the different panels, none of them wrestling-related. So, Patrick Stewart at a panel. That man's amazing in person. It was really fun. It was exhausting, but it was fun.
Okay. I'm going to catch heat here for saying it now, just like I did when I said it when it happened. I don't care. Fuck the Ultimate Warrior.
No, I mean, I understand that it's funny. God's honest truth, on my grandfather's grave when I passed him by, I thought of you. I'm like, yeah, Harry would hate that. Harry would hate that. But
my guess is the guy cosplaying as Warrior probably had better cardio than the real Warrior did.
But, oh my God, the guy had an amazing body. Holy crap. But his height, his build, the makeup, the hair was his actual, hair. I was like, holy crap. It was one of the better wrestling cosplays that I've seen, and I've seen a few in my few years of going to Comic-Con.
Speaking of wrestling cosplay, and then I'm going to go ahead and get the show wrapped up here just because this is kind of a deterrent for me. This is kind of a detour for me here, and I'll give you an idea here. October, as everybody knows, is the month of Halloween. Halloween is very popular for costumes and everything, and that is no different than with professional wrestling shows. Mm-hmm. One of the funnest things that one of the professional the companies that I'm with, called Real Action Pro Wrestling, does is we do a costume battle royal every year on the Halloween show, which is completely separate from the actual rest of the show. You go through a regular show, there's an intermission, and then there's a costume battle royal. And it's the costume battle royal is just basically people dressing up as their favorite characters, their favorite wrestlers, their favorite things from anywhere in sports, entertainment, movies, television, music, anything, and ending up in the ring. And we have had some absolute amazing ones. A buddy of mine, his name is Kevin Koppel, did a full-on demon paint Balor a couple of years ago.
Oh, nice.
Another friend of mine named Curtis Meganson, he wrestles as Kurt Fury, did Shinsuke Nakamura. And, nailed the motions and everything. The owner of the company, John Cathalon, did Taz one year. Skinny Taz, not, announcer Taz.
Right.
And just,
that's
it's
so cool.
One of our favorite matches. It's one of our favorite matches of the year just because it is – I do play-by-play commentary for the company. It is
right.
The one match of the year. It is the one match of the year that I don't do commentary for. Because I physically can't. I'm too busy laughing at the announce table.
I would love to see that. It sounds hysterical. So, okay, so no, wait. So I have one question, and then I'll let you know, then we can go. The people, it's just fans that get in the ring, or these people who have, or wrestlers who get in the ring?
These are wrestlers, but they're dressing up. They're trained wrestlers and everything. It's people that wrestle on the show, and then a couple of people who aren't on the show but come in. A couple of big names have done the battle royal as well before. A local guy here named Mark McKay did Bailey a couple of years ago, which was really, really impressive. It's something fun for us to do. It's entertaining for the boys. It's entertaining for the fans. It's one of those things where sometimes you just can't take wrestling seriously, and you shouldn't have to take wrestling seriously. Wrestling is meant to be a distraction. Wrestling is meant to be a way to escape from everyday life. As we've talked about many, many times before, wrestling means a lot of things to a lot of different people. To me, wrestling is a male soap opera. It is an opportunity to escape your everyday life by watching people portray characters that, while they may not be real, you feel a connection with them, and you feel as if you know them, depending on how much time you spend watching them on the screen, much like we talked about with Eddie Guerrero earlier in the show.
I agree. I mean, and even very quickly, I mean, you have Xavier Woods, who cosplays as other wrestlers, which is just hysterical and awesome in its own right.
Him and his buddy doing the Iconics a couple of weeks ago.
And they did somebody else last year, too, yeah. Hysterical.
I was shaking. NXT used to do the costume battle royal, actually, on its loop shows around this time of year. There's video of that's the one where Bailey dressed as Balor and Balor dressed as Bailey.
Oh, right. Now I remember. They're crazy. Crazy, crazy, crazy.
So there are plenty of opportunities here. It's just a reminder to everybody that it's meant to be fun. Don't take it too seriously.
Oh, and that's, I mean, I know we have to wrap up, but I'll just say this very quickly. That's the biggest problem, especially on social media. You have fans going crazy over wrestlers' rankings in the game, or, you know, who they feel they should be getting pushed, or this, you know, this and that thing. And it goes back to the Hell in the Cell match, you know, ending as well. You know, people were, like, going nuts. How did it really affect your day? You know, how did it really affect your life? Now, I'm not going to lie, I've stopped watching TV shows because they got rid of characters and the show wasn't the same, you know, this, that, the other thing, and that happens, and that's, you know, everybody's prerogative, but, you know, how is this really affecting, if this is affecting your day so much that you're miserable, then you need to take a step back.
To all those people that do nothing but spend their time complaining and think that their opinion matters.
It doesn't matter what you think! Y'all wouldn't know entertainment if it slapped you in the face!
Food for thought, everybody. This has been The Reaction on the Chair Shot Radio Network. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next Monday night.